Flatiron Health sponsors this episode. Their mission is to improve the lives of cancer patients by helping oncologists spend more time with patients and empowering scientists to conduct research faster. To achieve these goals, they're looking for bright, curious, and passionate people to join the team. With roles across engineering, sales, and data science, join Flatiron in building tech for good. The link is in the show notes.
Yo, everyone, welcome back. Brand new techish in the building. It's me, Michael Behane, and I'm with
Abdesi of Hustle Crew. Michael, I just want to start off by saying that I've made a decision to ban all societal and political discussions from techish.
Okay, so what are we going to talk about? Yeah, the world was really great today. No, I'm joking. What's the backstory? What's the backstory behind
that? I was doing a base camp.
And a Coinbase.
See? And a Coinbase. It's a trend now. So I was doing a Coinbase on Techish. No, we got to start with that. We've got to start with the announcement that sent ripples to the tech industry earlier this week. I mean, it must have been, Monday?
Yeah.
That Jason Fried?
Freed, yeah.
Freed, okay. And Daniel Henson, DHH of Basecamp, published their blog post announcing new ways of working at Basecamp, new cultural norms. The first of which was no more political or societal discussions at work, because they're there to build software, apparently. Don't know what the hell the rest of us are doing. And this, of course, was met, well, let's face it, some people were like, ooh, another person like banning all BLM and racism chats that are making me feel bad about myself. But the majority of folks were not happy to hear this news, myself included, because I was like, wow. I mean, I interviewed DHH for Product Hunt Radio, and just in general, really respect the stuff that him and Jason do, talking about remote work before everyone was talking about remote work, all about lean working, agile working, all these great things. And then for them to come out with this statement that's like, we have reached a decision that a lot of this political and societal talk is a distraction, and now people feel complicit by not even participating in the conversation, and we don't want people having to deal with all of this mental energy. Should I join the conversation? Oh God, if I don't join the conversation, will people think I'm racist? Oh, should I join the conversation? Oh, but should I filter what I say? All of that thinking, it's just too distracting from why they're really there, which is to make software. So the solution, apparently, is to just censor and ban and prohibit any conversations around society and politics, which, quite frankly, I personally am unable to separate from my very existence as a Black and Asian woman. So yeah, very, very interesting. Very interesting. And very, honestly, for what I thought was one of the most progressive companies, just like a sad, sad reminder how like representation is always the answer. Like, what happens when two cishet white guys consult each other on how to respond to conversations about racism unfolding in their company? They come to the decision that they should close the D&I committee, which like nearly 30% of the company were participating in, and ban all conversations about racism. That was the solution. It also made me realize that our work is so difficult that big ass grown up millionaire men chicken out of it. Anyway, let me pass the mic to you, Mike.
No, man, keep doing your thing. I think, just to reiterate what you said, it's very disappointing in the sense that, like you said, I definitely looked up to them as a company. You mentioned a few of the things that they have spearheaded. One of them is also just bootstrapping companies. They were kind of the first ones that I saw saying, listen, this VC thing, it's not necessarily what everybody needs. You don't need to build the next Facebook. You can build something small and kind of do it in that way. And I, you know, followed their blueprint. They've released so many books, and I've actually appeared on their podcast. And it was really sad because it's hosted by Waylin, who's Asian American woman. And they released an episode like yesterday, and it was like 2 minutes. And it was like, hey, we're just pausing the podcast. There's not going to be an episode for quite some time. And the whole podcast is about how to work, because that's what Basecamp's marketing was like. We can show companies the best way to work. And the co-hosts couldn't even get out of the sentence. Basecamp podcast, how to work. He's like, I can't even say it, because this is now basically, I recommend everybody listen to it. It's only 2 minutes. Do you know what I'm saying? I'll put the link in the show notes. But it goes to show the internal strife that's going on within the company. And just before we hit live and press record, an article came through explaining what actually happened. So we didn't know. Like, I thought maybe was it, you know, obviously there was the Derek Chauvin trial, and then this happened so quickly. I think maybe there's some internal discussions about BLM or something overtly political from the outside world or societal, at least. But it wasn't. It turns out that there was a list within the company that had gone on since day one, where they would have funny sounding names of people who had signed up. So number one, it's a breach of confidentiality, really, when you sign up to an app. That's first and foremost. And the name apparently had like a mixture of like people of European backgrounds, Asian backgrounds, African backgrounds. So it wasn't like, oh, here's the funny sounding, you know, African names. Apparently it was a mix of different kind of names. But at the same time, people were like, I'm not comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And when it was flagged up.
So this is the Casey Newton report that came out literally just before we hit record.
Yes, yeah. So I had a quick read of it just so I could stay abreast of what's going on. And it turned out that workers at the company were saying, listen, there's a direct link between taking the piss out of someone's name and then higher level forms of discrimination. And DHH was basically saying, no, you're catastrophizing, which is a bit deep because, to be honest, that's a term that is used within cognitive behavioral therapy when somebody basically has like a mental distortion. Like when you're like, oh, my days, like people don't like me. You know, people think I'm fat, so they don't like me or whatever, whatever. And your therapist will say, no, you're catastrophizing. You are taking it beyond, you know, what is healthy to think, basically, right? So to use those kind of words, I don't think that's a good idea. He basically shut down the conversation. And then from there on in, they were like, you know what? Him and Jason were like, yeah, going forward, we're not going to have these kind of discussions at the company, and we're shutting down the committee for D&I. Now, if you ask me, do I think committees are a good thing per se? I'm not going to say that. I can't say that. Do I think that there should be people who are responsible for D&I within the company? Obviously. Do I think one third of the company needs to be involved? I don't know. I'm going to leave that to you, actually, because this is your work. It's not necessarily my work within existing corporations, right? I'm kind of from the outside trying to do some stuff outside, basically, right? So when it comes back to you, I'll let you speak on that. But I'm just disappointed, and I think we have to be eyes wide open. More companies are going to do this. And the problem is actually that Coinbase and Basecamp are very successful companies. Coinbase is like worth 100 billion. Basecamp is basically the bootstrap version of success. So other companies are going to be like, F it. And I saw the founder of Black Girls Code, Kimberly, saying there's going to be a bounce back now where people are not going to be on diversity. You know, as much as the conversation has progressed, obviously in terms of real progress, nothing's really happened, but that conversation, there might now be a bounce back where a lot of companies are now like saying, is it really worth our time? Is it really worth, you know, our energy?
So the first thing, is there going to be, are people going to divest from all of these D&I efforts now that people are actually saying, ooh, D&I work is actually distracting and divisive? Yeah. I don't think so. Because what I think is, consider the fact that maybe 10 years ago, an announcement like this wouldn't even have sent ripples through the world.
Right.
Like it would have just been a thing that a CEO is within his power to say and do and not cause a stir. But literally the minute this article dropped, how many people went on Twitter and were like, Techish Pod, come on now. What you gonna say about this? I went on LinkedIn. Investors that I know are talking about it. CEOs that I know are talking about it. I go on Twitter. You know, authority figures from media, world of startup culture, entrepreneurs, founders, advocates. Everyone was talking about it. You know, like everybody's talking about it. And I think that is because people disagree with this. And the thing that really disappointed me the most about this is that these two leaders, Jason and DHH, are intelligent men. Like we said, they've got that track record. We admire them as leaders, product builders, innovators, entrepreneurs. But the things that they said about why they're banning political and societal discussions did not make sense to me. How can you say that talking about the reality of people in your team's lives, things that are impacting their ability to be productive at work, are a major distraction?
Yeah.
A major distraction? That's my life isn't a distraction. It's just what I am facing and dealing with every day. And this idea of like, it saps our energy. Whose energy? Because actually, when people create space for me to speak my truth and talk about the things that matter to me, that gives me energy. What saps energy from me is when people are having conversations about my hair or my culture or things that relate to my identity. You know what I'm saying? That they can't relate to or they're ignorant about. That's energy draining for me. And it's just crazy as I was reading this, like it's not healthy and it hasn't served us well. Who's the us in that?
The money makers, the shareholders, the business owners.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like through the lens of a cishet white guy, I have realized that this is not an optimal situation for cishet white guys. I have therefore decided to revert course to a more optimal direction for cishet white guys, because ultimately our comfort matters more than yours. Good night. Goodbye. Mm. We're back to square one. And the reality is there are people who are not willing to go back to square one. They're not willing to go back. You know, I had a really powerful conversation about this post with the CEO of Brandwatch, where I work. And he was just like, we have made progress on the things we want to make progress on. Mm. Increasing representation of women and people of color. Literally, we invest in a partnership with your company, and that has helped us move forward in our goals. You know, roll out diversity and inclusion training. I was able to hire folks from, you know, Hustle Crew to lead on those sessions. Equitable access to mental health support. We launched a support network. He was like, we just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. On the things that are important to us and our community. And I think there are a lot of CEOs out there who will not be deterred by this. They're like, we have our plan. we know what we're doing. It doesn't matter what Basecamp are saying and what they want to do. And I hope that's going to be true for most people because of the work that we have been doing to increase representation in teams. Wherever there are people who are either underrepresented or allies of people who are underrepresented, you can't start divesting from this stuff because they're going to hold you accountable. That's what I think.
You know what the thing you said that was fascinating about, like, listen, it looked like the majority are on the quote unquote our side. But I feel like it's not about who's speaking, it's about who's not speaking. Because the human mind only notices people that are coming out saying, I disagree with this, blah, blah, blah. But there are countless CEOs who haven't said a thing and are just keeping their head down. And that's what my concern is. Do you know what I'm saying? As in, like, it's very clear to see who's against it. But people that are inclined to this way of thinking, they're not going to say nothing. It's just going to be a quick little announcement within the company. And yeah, that's just my concern and my fear in it. I don't necessarily think the backlash is as strong as you think. I think the tide is slowly turning in this direction more so than our direction slightly.
People are greedy. And also, let's remember, it's not everything that's happening is trying to revert back to the course. Okay. George Floyd was murdered. We saw it. We couldn't look away. Breonna Taylor was murdered. We saw it. We couldn't look away. Almost a year from those events. You know, I think what's happening is these conversations are taking up real estate mm-hmm. in our minds, in our hearts, that certain people do not want that to take up space anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're using whatever power and privilege and manipulation they have to achieve that end. And in some cases, it's, oh, for the sake of productivity. And it's, well, sir, let me bring you back to the research around productivity. Because when you speak to leading behavioral psychologists and human resources experts, they are saying that the jet fuel of productivity is psychological safety and trust. Mm. How do you achieve psychological safety and trust? By creating inclusive and equitable spaces. And people are literally now saying that for the sake of productivity, they're going to stop their efforts to create inclusive and equitable spaces. That is going against the data. That's going against the research. And it's sad that this is a distraction because there are so many other conversations I've participated in the 10 years that I've worked in this industry that did not serve my work and did not serve me. Whether it's random Slack channels let's share, you know, whatever, what's happening in the sports world, or let's share mm-hmm. this, let's share that. I was like, that's a distraction.
Yeah.
I literally like have been in offices where we're streaming matches. But now I want to talk about protests. That's a distraction to you?
Yeah.
This is a really irrational and nonsensical distinction. So I don't know, like, yes, some people are going to be silent, but that's just because the status quo is the status quo and it wouldn't be the status quo if it wasn't the status quo, right? Mm-hmm. People are sensing the shift in the status quo, and this is a fight against that. They want to maintain it, and that's always going to be like that.
Yeah, so the next story, this is kind of, I wouldn't say it's funny, but I did kind of find it a bit funny. There was a CEO of a startup valued at $2 billion. I won't even name the startup because it's not necessarily that relevant. And the CEO was fired. And the reason why he was fired is that he went to a meeting high on LSD. And he was essentially microdosing. Now, this is one of these cool, trendy things that happen in Silicon Valley where people take small doses of these kind of, you know, drugs, and it's meant to make you more creative. It's meant to make you more open-minded. It's meant to make you more whatever, spiritual. I don't know. I'm not involved in it. Do you know what I'm saying? And this is not actually like an anti-drug screed from me, because I'm actually pro-legalization of all drugs. But why I was actually kind of happy that the dude was fired is because we have hierarchies of drugs. Now, you have drugs that are seen, because of who takes them, as progressive, as cool, as like mind-opening, mind-altering. But if a black CEO went to a meeting and they were high on weed, I don't think it wouldn't even make an article. It would just be like, what are you doing, fam? You're gone. Because weed is associated primarily with black and brown people in a negative way. And it's like, you're lazy, you're not productive, whatever, whatever. But microdosing, that's something that Jack Dorsey might do. That's something that, you know, Tim Ferriss might do, right? And I do think there is actually benefits to probably all of this stuff, right? But I just found it interesting that this actually even became a news article. Like, what do you think? Like, should the person have been fired for microdosing on LSD going to a meeting? CEO of a $2 billion startup.
I mean, it's just crazy because it's like, I know investors that have raped women and are still investing.
Yeah, mad. Oh my God.
And like, this guy didn't hurt anybody. Like, I'm not saying that has to be like the line in the sand. I'm by no means like a justice expert or a judge, but there are a lot of CEOs who have been high on a board meeting and haven't been caught.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Right. And it's one of those, like, unfortunately, you know, frustrating situations where he got busted. I mean, he obviously wasn't corpus mentis enough to just like hand over that meeting and be like, dude, I'm seeing like flying unicorns. Yeah, yeah. I need someone else to take this over. I mean, he must have been pretty high for them to notice.
Yeah, maybe he got, wrong. He might have got the dose wrong and it was clear.
I mean, that, yeah, if you're microdosing, no one should be noticing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think tech is very arbitrary in who it chooses to make an example of.
Yeah, you know what?
And the fact that he wasn't white probably made it easier for them to fire him.
Yeah, he was an Asian American CEO. I don't think that in the ideal world he should be fired. I wouldn't care less, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But I just think while we live in a world where there's such unequal treatment about the way certain drugs are treated, I don't think it's cool that like Tim Ferriss can openly talk about LSD. But
and Steve Jobs,
yeah, and all those people when we look upon it as like, oh, that's so cool, like, you know what I'm saying? But there's, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of black men in jail for weed. You know what I mean? And that's not even just necessarily even for selling, just possession. So yeah, miss me with that, man. I don't have that much sympathy. Not yet. Until we have that level playing field, then I'll be like, nah, he should be fine. Because I don't think, you know, taking microdosing LSD makes you a bad CEO. It probably does make you a better CEO, maybe in some ways. You know what I mean? Not that I would know, but like, yeah.
Group hug. Everyone gather around for a group hug. I want to talk a little bit about the TikTok algo and just in general the maturity of algorithms within social media, or rather the complexity of algorithms in social media and the gap between what we think or the stories being told and reality.
Yeah.
So let's jump into this a bit. So the last time we met, you were saying, I don't know what they put in that algo at TikTok. Yeah. That's some crack.
Yeah. I'm hiding.
It's so addictive. And then just a few days after you said that, I read this amazing Bloomberg article by Shelley Banjo all about how TikTok chooses which songs to go viral. Now, this was absolutely fascinating. It was particularly talking about Megan Thee Stallion and Savage, which did the rounds all around TikTok and ended up being a smash hit. Yeah. What I thought was super interesting about this was, you know, the crux of the article is basically it's not as algorithmically and technically driven as you think. Yeah. There are still a lot of human people behind the scenes devising a bunch of ABCDEF tests and plotting that against data and models and predictions to then eventually make things which go viral. And I just thought it was like such an important conversation for us to have, because a lot of us are thinking of algorithms and thinking of artificial intelligence like this black box. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God. And don't get me wrong, some of it is. Like, we talked about the contract bot that was built at Facebook before that the engineer had to shut down because he no longer understood what was happening in that negotiation. But I think when it comes to things like TikTok and like, oh, how do they know? How do they know what's going to be big? You know, they don't. Yeah. That ultimately is the TLDR. They don't, but they can guess and they can run a bunch of tests. So specifically in the case of Megan Thee Stallion and Savage, there was actually a number of tracks from that album that the label thought were going to be the bangers, were going to be the big hits. Yeah. So what the TikTok team did was like, okay, let's actually start testing these. We're going to put a number of the tracks on the platform and see which ones our creators use the most. And then they realized that Savage was the one that was really blowing up. So TikTok then said to the label, hey, I think you should actually lead with Savage because that's what people are really popping with. And then they created a campaign around Savage and then that blew up. So I just thought it was really interesting because it was just like this reminder that, like, you know, the computers don't know us that well yet. Yeah. And ultimately, as much as companies want to be like, we're AI, because let's face it, AI gets you funding,
it's marketing,
makes you look hot and sexy. Behind the scenes, your so-called AI-powered hit-making machine is a bunch of people literally just running A/B tests.
Yeah, no, I think it's fascinating actually, because they said that the top influencers at TikTok get an email from TikTok saying, these are the top trends. We think this would be a good look for you to do this. And it's not organic, like you said. And it's interesting because I mentioned this book so many times, but in No Filter, they talk about how that kind of Instagram aesthetic was pushed by Kevin Systrom. They used to have the explore page that was like a default where everybody would see it, and he would make sure that it was a certain kind of aesthetic that was on there, versus when they joined Facebook was like, nah fam, it's all algo, like we don't even, there's no human touch, there's no human nothing. And then if you look at what's happened now, when it's purely algorithm based, the top 10 pages on Facebook are like Ben Shapiro again, Ben Shapiro part 3, Ben Shapiro part 4.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's insane actually when you look at the top 10 pages on Facebook. So I think, yeah, it's just interesting. You're right. Things are not often as they seem. Often that AI talk is marketing and the fingerprints of a human is often there pushing, you know, tipping the scales. So it is fascinating. Yeah, so maybe I won't hire. I mean, I still would hire that person if I was the Clubhouse CEO, because that's clever. Because I log into Clubhouse now and I'm like, I don't see anything I want to listen to right now. Like, and I'm trying.
Final thing I just want to say before we wrap up the story. So in this article, looking at most downloaded apps globally in 2020, data collected by App Annie, this excludes games.
Yeah.
TikTok was the most downloaded app.
Yeah.
which is pretty incredible. Go TikTok. Happy to see that that weird China-US war that Trump tried to phase didn't impact them. But what I thought was even more interesting was that 2 and 3, Facebook and WhatsApp Messenger, who in God's name is downloading the Facebook app? I'm clearly in my own bubble of like, because I
there's old people.
I use that.
Old people.
Yeah. And anyway, final point on this. So top 10 apps, Facebook, number 2, WhatsApp Messenger, number 3, Instagram, number 5, Facebook Messenger, number 6. 4 out of 10 of the most downloaded apps that were not games in 2020 are owned by Zuck. That is crazy.
Everybody go buy that Facebook stock now. No, I'm joking. Why does Mark change now? Well, I think in terms of downloads, it will still carry on. But why I actually wouldn't recommend buying Facebook stock outside of the ethical implications is that now Apple has updated their iOS. So we talked about this ages ago, but it's now gone live. And I've actually got the update, but I haven't seen the changes I'm going to mention. So essentially now with this update, you're going to go into Facebook, you're going to go into Instagram, and it's going to say, do you want these people to track you, essentially? And survey data said that 80% of people will say no. Facebook's come out and said, listen, you're hurting small business. We're doing this so that ads are more tailored towards your personal preference, blah, 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 blah. I don't know, man. I'm like I said last time, I'm happy for Apple. I'm glad Apple's doing this. I think it's actually a win for like people who are like right wing in terms of people who believe in free market capitalism, because we're there like, government, man, do something, like government, regulate this. And Apple's like, you know what? We're in our little ecosystem of all the kind of rich iOS users. Yeah. You're not doing that no more. You're not tracking, like, you know, without,
but is that in the name of data or in the name of competitive advantage?
Regardless, the outcome is the outcome. And that's probably what people who are more laissez-faire economics would say, is that companies in their own self-interest will produce an outcome that we like, basically, even if it is in their own self-interest, because Apple makes money selling products. Apple doesn't make money through advertisement. Now, Apple has tried to, I think they've saw a niche to be the privacy company. Tim Cook has come out, you know, every so often saying, we don't sell your data, we're the privacy guys. And I think it's a position that they're playing so that they don't get backlash from the government. So obviously now there's antitrust work on Facebook been happening. Should they be broken up? Amazon, for example, as well. And Apple's like, well, this is how we can get the territory of being the good guys. Whether it'll work, I don't know. But I'm glad that update is there. I can't wait to hit that no button. I can't wait to hit no, don't track me. My thumb is ready.
I like personalized ads. Take my data. I don't mind.
So I know people that say they like Instagram ads because they actually seem to be quite fitting. Man. Yeah. So
I'm one of those people. Bought my new phone case. You know, I've told you before, I have a love-hate relationship with Facebook. I bought, you know, I get concert tickets when things could happen. I managed to get James Blake tickets before they sold out because Instagram reminded me that there was the last few tickets left. So, I mean, you know how I feel about privacy and data. I want to divest from big tech for ethical reasons, but on a personal basic level, it's convenient for me. Like, I will never shy away from the conflict in my heart. Okay?
That's hilarious, though. You're like, big tech must go down, but then James Blaine tickets, not them James Blake tickets. Yo, thank you, Instagram.
It's complicated.
Thank you, Zach.
It's complicated.
Thank you, Zach.
It's complicated.
Okay, let us know on hashtag TechEdge. Are you going to hit no or yes?
I want relevant ads. If I'm going to get ads, let them be relevant. Oh.
This episode is sponsored by Movable Ink. Movable Ink activates any data into real time. Personalized content for over 700 of the world's most innovative brands. Movable Ink is one of the fastest growing SaaS companies in the US and is recognized by Inc. magazine's best workplaces in 2020 and 2019. They're hiring on pocketjobs.com and the link is in the show notes to apply.
Talk to me about Heart Attack Man.
Yeah, so I'm going to call this story Heart Attack Man because I don't know the dude's name. He was a manager, a senior exec at HSBC, the bank, and he had a heart attack.
Jonathan Frustick, by the way, if you wanted to know.
Shout out to Jonathan. He's still around. He had a heart attack and his first thought was like, oh my God, I've got this meeting. I've got this corporate thing I can't miss. I've got this Zoom call I can't miss. And let me go to the hospital maybe in a minute. So anyway, he goes to the hospital. They're like, you're having a heart attack. He makes a post on LinkedIn saying, listen, this is the moment now. I'm changing my life. If work ain't serving me, fuck work. I'm not doing back-to-back Zoom meetings. And it went viral. I think he had over 200,000 people that like responded, liked it, hearted it, whatever they use on LinkedIn. And I think it resonated with a lot of people. And it resonates with me because I think this year or 18 months, I've done better than I've ever done before, but my body has kind of told me, pause. You know what I'm saying? And it's a warning. And sometimes we hit that inflection point where you're like, you know what? I've got to reassess things. So more power to the dude. Hopefully he does stick to what he's going to say. And I know me personally, my hierarchy has changed. It used to be like success, happiness, and then blah, 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 whatever. I've definitely put happiness as number one now, kind of thing. I don't know. What about you? Is happiness your number one?
And pizza, happiness?
Yeah. Or success?
I don't know. No, happiness is too vapid and empty for me.
I think.
Yeah, because like I'm someone that's actually like not happy a lot of the time, and I've made my peace with that, and that's okay. No, don't get me wrong.
That's sorry. You know what? Should it last? That's not a funny thing to say, because there are people that have like depression and whatever, whatever. But as a statement, it was funny when you're like, I'm not happy most of the time.
No, I guess what I'm trying to say is like, okay, first of all, happiness is very subjective. And I think for me, happy is something that's like, you know, I don't want to use that word lightly. Like happy for me is just like, you know, joyful, delightful, worry-free, obligation-free, salad days. You know what I mean? Like amazing. And it's not that I don't have a lot of moments in those in my life. I have a very privileged life. But it's also the fact that the work that I have chosen to do is very difficult, mm-hmm. right? Like whether it's the work I do as an entrepreneur at Hustle Crew or the work that I do in Brandwatch as a VP of Global Community and Belonging, a lot of the work that I do campaigning, advocating, driving change is really difficult and uncomfortable work, but it's very fulfilling and rewarding.
Right.
So I'm not only just putting happiness at number one anymore. I think the thing that I learned in the last couple of years is that like influencing, not like an influencer, but like actually like influencing change, yeah. you know, for me has become like a higher priority, and it leads to moments of joy, but there's more time doing that work that's actually like really uncomfortable and painful. But then when it leads to something rewarding, I'm like, woohoo, that's really great. So I don't know if I've explained that well, but that's what I mean.
You're basically saying that your work is fulfilling and it's meaningful to you. And that is basically, you know, supersedes the moment to moment. I'm like, I'm skipping down the road. I'm like doing backflip.
Right. Yes, yeah, exactly. Because I've just realized, for me, actually, like one of the things that makes me feel like I have a purpose-driven life is actually being in service of others. And sometimes being in service of others isn't happy, because what makes me happy is when I'm in service of myself. And I can find ways to be in service of others without giving too much of myself away. But at least where I am in my journey of life right now, I get a lot of reward from doing the work that I do. And the work that I do is not happy work, but it leads to moments of joy and it leads to happiness.
No, I get you. I think actually, to be honest, the road to misery is probably when the work is difficult, but there's no meaning to it. And I think that's probably where this dude was effed up, where it's like he wasn't getting that kind of intrinsic feeling of like, okay, at least I'm making a change. It was like just miserable work for the money. And it's funny you mention about in service of others, because the research that I was doing basically says that people that are the most content are the ones that are actually in service of others. And that if I gave you like $100, and you were to be like, and I was like, yo, Abba, Mac, spend this money to make you happy. Are you okay?
Take you to Nando's, bro. Huh? I'll take you to Nando's, bro.
that's the point. Actually, people that end up being happy are the ones that spend it for others, or spend it in a way that includes others. But my instinct would have been, let me just get myself a massage. Let me go to the cinema. Let me just spend it on myself. But actually, it actually makes you less happy than if you just spend it on others or spend it in the service of others. Anyway, just I thought I'd throw that in.
The best way to cheer yourself up, do a random act of kindness for someone in your life.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like whenever I'm like, oh my God, like what's happening? I feel so sad. I feel so blah, 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 blah. I'm just like, oh, so who do I love?
I'm waiting. Okay, I'm waiting. Where's my bro? I'm waiting.
But yeah, or just random act of kindness. But no, I think one of the things that's really sad about capitalism, I mean, one of the many, 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 many things, is like the pursuit of getting more capital has become a legit purpose.
Yeah.
When all of history has shown us that psychologically, that's not going to end well for you. And in this guy's case, physically, that's not going to end well for you. That alone, like prioritizing that alone, never ends well.
Unless you actually enjoy doing that. So Warren Buffett seems to be smiling all the time. His whole book is called Tap Dancing to Work, right? He actively enjoys analyzing companies and investing in companies.
But he's also his own boss, and he's lucky, and he's an outlier. Yes,
that's also true. But most of us don't enjoy...
Name two other examples.
But the thing is, me and you would sit there and talk about companies, even if we probably weren't recording right now, as in not every week and probably not all the time, but maybe like once in a while, we'd be like, oh, this company... So we actively enjoy talking about this type of stuff. But some people, this is work. They would be like, I don't find this fascinating. So everyone has a different thing. But you're right. For most people, chasing money, chasing capital, it's not the road to fulfillment. We won't use the word happiness, like you said, fulfillment.
Ha ha ha!
I got to shout out my boy Daniel Kaluuya, straight London town from Camden, ooh, Northwest London, near my area. He's the first Black British actor to ever win an Oscar, which is insane. And he won it for Judas and the Black Messiah. Unbelievable. He gave a hilarious speech where he thanked his mum and dad for having sex. And his mum, his Ugandan mother, looked at him like, boy, are you crazy? Absolutely hilarious. And then the other moment that was a bit cringe was that during the kind of post, you know, red carpet press talk, one of the journalists was like, yo, like, how does it feel to work with Regina King? Regina King did not direct his movie. She actually directed another Black movie. And he was like, you can see in his face, he was like, oh, are you being serious right now? But he played it off.
No.
And he was like, I'm sorry, can you repeat the question? And she was like, she kind of covered and backtracked on whatever.
He's a nice guy.
He could have put her on blast. But you know what? It happens every year, because there was one year where there was Hidden Figures and Fences. And I think they asked Pharrell, because he was a producer on Hidden Figures. And they were like, how do you feel about Hidden Fences doing so well? But every year,
they just throw
all the Black movies together into their mind, and it's like, it just gets it wrong because we're all the same. But yeah, shout out to Daniel Kaluuya. That's amazing.
Oh my God. The way people do not pay attention to people of different culture to them. It's just like,
it's all one homogenous block.
Because that's all, honestly, that's where I'm racist the most as well.
Go on, talk to me.
Like, where I'm just like, because there's just other identity groups where I'm just like, I will very much more easily conflate two people. It happens a lot sometimes with like white male British actors. So I'll say to my husband, oh, is that so-and-so or so-and-so? Are they the same person? He said, well, no, they're not. Like, and I was like, oh, okay. And yeah, because obviously like I can recognize my culture as Black and Asian people the best. And I'm just like, oh, okay, yeah, cool, cool, cool. But then with others, I'm just like, oh, no, no.
Is that Tom Hanks? I can't tell. Which one is that? But
you know what you know, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you know what you know. And at the end of the day, everyone is, well, prejudiced.
But you're just like, you know, an average person. You're not on the press conference, on the Oscar, like asking a celebrity.
Yeah, obviously, I'm not getting paid.
You're not getting paid. And there's one thing to be like, is that Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks? But it's one thing to be on the red carpet and be like, yeah, Mr. Hanks. And it's like, this is Tom Cruise.
Also, I can tell those two apart. I can tell Mission Impossible from Forrest Gump. Thank you.
Which one is which? No, I'm joking. I won't test you.
I don't know.
So the other thing, there's three other Oscar-related points. So I want to shout out Van Lathan. He was a former TMZ employee. He was the Black guy who G-checked Kanye. So remember when Kanye was on TMZ talking about slavery was a choice and whatever, whatever. And there was the Black guy that got up and was like, Kanye, you are talking rubbish. You know what I'm talking about?
Remember.
Yeah. Everybody like on YouTube, look that up. Yeah. He actually got fired from TMZ for being a quote unquote troublemaker. We know what that means. He's now won an Oscar for executive producer on a short film that came out. That was a really good, it's on Netflix. I'm going to put the link to the show notes. I can't remember the name of it. But basically the short film is about, it's like a time loop mixed with a kind of police brutality story. I haven't watched it because I don't want to watch any police brutality stories, but I heard it's really good. Shout out to Van Lathan for winning an Oscar and tagging your employer on your Instagram post, your former employer, when you won. So I aspire to that level of petty.
That's gangster. I'm down for that.
And then the other point was Chadwick didn't win. He was meant to win. Everybody thought Chadwick was going to win and he didn't win. I don't know what they were smoking.
So I mean, are the Oscars still, who's watching that? Who watched that? No, I mean, don't get me wrong. Praise where praise is due. But we talked about this before. Are awards still relevant? Do we care? Not only because we're not winning them. Obviously, they're relevant when we win them. But other than that.
that's the thing. So I think only 9 million people watched it this year. About 7-8 years ago, it was about 40 million. So it's going down. My theory
Everyone's on TikTok.
But my theory is that as soon as Black people start winning, people are like, turn this shit off now. That's my theory. That's what the haters are. Just, they don't want to watch it now that Black people are actually winning. Nah, but I think generally you're right. I mean, it's hard to have a movie award show when nobody's seen the movies. There's been no cinema for the year. I've barely seen any movies.
Yeah.
So who?
God, I miss the cinema so much.
Yeah, I know.
I miss the movies. Gosh.
What do you think then? Are the Oscars done?
On the way down.
On the way down.
I think there's more relevant things to happen. I just feel like, so honestly, like the older I get, and I know this is like, okay, boomer. But so many awards just feel like a scam. Like after the weekend got snubbed at the Grammys, I was just like, what the heck? That's ridiculous. And now so few people showing up. I mean, it's also just ridiculous that Daniel Kaluuya is the first Black actor to win Best Supporting Actor. Like
first
what?
Black British actor.
First Black British. Yeah. Like how many Black British people have been in movies? So many. Oh, I don't know. It's just like too little too late on the representation front and then just no longer as culturally relevant.
Yeah, I agree. But shout out to all the winners. Shout out to Daniel Kaluuya.
No, totally. I mean, respect. I mean, that's epic. I mean, let's get more Black Oscars and then shut it down.
Oh, it's reviews time. And here's a review from, it's me, okay, via Apple Podcasts in the US. They said, so enlightening, but I need to know the host zodiac signs. Ha ha ha. So Abba, what is your zodiac sign?
I mean, I feel like my zodiac sign is very obvious. Very, very obvious. So I'm just going to drop a pause so that all the zodiac experts can weigh in and then be proven wrong and realize that zodiac leaves something to be desired.
Everybody make your guess now and reveal. Go on. What is your sign?
Aries, first sign of the zodiac.
What does that mean, though?
Notable Aries include Stalin, Hitler, and Carrie Bradshaw of Sex and the City. Duh. Isn't it obvious now? Isn't it obvious? I mean, you know, I'm a dictator at heart. What's your star sign, Mike?
I'm a Taurus, and I once saw on TV that it said it's most likely to get rich. So that's all I'm going to run with it. I'm happy about that. But yeah, shout out to that. I mean, I don't really buy into any of the zodiac stuff. I'm sorry to be a Debbie Downer. In fact, when I used to go on dates and people would be like, what's your star sign? I'd be like, a red flag.
we can't be together. Yeah, we cannot be together.
Work. Because there's nothing wrong with that. But like for me, it's just like, it's not my forte, man. I'm not like that. But anyways, I digress.
I used to love doing like compatibility matches, like in my teens and my 20s, just like find out people's birthday. That's what Facebook was useful for, actually. You know, you go down to the union, find yourself a crush, find out their Facebook, do a compatibility match.
So this is why you didn't get a first class degree. This is why you did not get a first class degree, because you're distracted.
I was one mark off.
You're distracted, fam. Distracted.
So just don't sound like my African. All right, everybody, thank you once again for listening. If you want to be a part of the conversation in between episodes, why don't you follow us at TechishPod on Twitter and Instagram. I'm on there. I'm engaging with that stuff. I'm replying to y'all, so get on there. And if you are using an iPhone right now, slide on into Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. It helps us in the rankings. And also, we read out your reviews because we love you. So yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Yep, peace. Ciao.